Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello, and welcome back. This is episode 313 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in today and joining us as we explore the minds and the tricks and the talents of Magic the Gathering's greatest players. We bring on the top 8 of Grand Prix and the top 16 of Pro Tour so that you can learn from them where they came from, their origin, what they struggled with at the beginning, and what they're doing now to get such great success. The goal here is to help you achieve your Magic goals, to get you qualified for the Pro Tour. I want to see you improve. I want to see you play and get better. And the tips and tricks and insights that these best players share with us are the key. They're the ticket. They are the way, the signposts that get us from point A to point B, from where we are now to qualify for the Pro Tour. So thank you so much for tuning in. I'm really excited to have our guests coming on in just a few minutes here. I'm really excited to have our guest with us today, but before we dive into the interview, I do want to say thank you so much to Paragon City Games, who has been a fantastic sponsor of the show. You can check them out at ParagonCityGames.com. They provide the prize support for the monthly giveaway that we do, as well as for the sealed league that we do every set. So thank you, Paragon City Games, for your support. Absolutely love it. And patrons, your direct support are what make this show possible. So thank you so much. And prodigies out there, if you're listening and you are interested in becoming a patron, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. Well, that said, I know that we are entering the holiday season with lots of comings and goings and lots of fun trips planned and things going on. So I really do appreciate you tuning in and listening. Maybe you're on a trip right now or have one coming up. But I'm so excited to be sharing these next few minutes with you. And with that said, we are ready to bring in our great guests. Sit down and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Get this. Our guest has been to 5 Grand Prix, and of those 5, he's made top 64 twice and first place once when he became the champion of GP Detroit 2018. He also has multiple top 64 finishes at SCG Open events and has made day 2 of every invitational he's attended. So when I say he knows his stuff, it's no joke. So tune in closely, prodigies, and let's welcome from Broxton, Georgia, the one, the only, William Corson. William, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. That sounded pretty great.
Hey, you are pretty great, man. So are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Absolutely.
Sweet. Now, prodigies, if you want to connect with William, you can find him on Twitter at Will Corson with an O at Will Corson 94. So give him some love, follow him there. He's trying to build up that Twitter following and become more, you know, prolific in the Magic space and Twitter and stuff like that. So at Will Corson 94, find him there. And you can also find him on Facebook, but really Twitter is his preferred method right now. So reach out, say thanks for being on the show, follow him, ask him a question, but that is how you can find, communicate, and connect with William. So, first off, Will, I didn't ask this before the show, but William or Will, what do you go by?
I honestly, either, usually Will.
Cool. Sounds good, man. So, Will, we love to learn about our guests outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. So, you're over there in Southern Georgia. Very cool. Are you born and raised in that area?
I am born and raised here. Right after graduating, I moved to Jacksonville, Florida. I lived there for about 6 years almost. So, I guess you could say that's kind of my home through my adult life, but I just moved back to my birthplace.
All right, cool. Now, is Magic all you do, or are you working? You mentioned graduating, so are you done with school? What's going on in that realm?
I actually want to go back to school. I was going for my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, and that's actually something I'd like to go back and finish, mainly just because I believe it's a career that I could find a good footing in, but I'd really like to teach if I had to, if I had to choose my career, but teaching jobs just aren't great in Georgia.
Cool. So I have a passion for teaching and want to finish your degree in nursing. Like you said, very cool. So right now, are you just working, or are you going to, because it doesn't sound like you're in school yet.
Oh, no, not right now. No, I'm right now I've been doing sales for about the past 4 to 5 years, but I'm trying to get into content creation as far as Magic goes.
Nice.
I've started streaming, and there was a card shop out of Atlanta called, I believe it was Borderlands. They had reached out to me to start writing articles, but I sent like 4 in and they just never published anybody's articles, and they just kind of scrapped the idea altogether.
Well, at least you have that dream, you know, keep it alive. So
Yeah, cool. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Streaming, content creation, that's cool. And work in the Magic scene. Obviously, like we mentioned in the bio, You have, I mean, you know your way around the block, and you definitely have, you know, showed up to in a big way to the Grand Prix. So we definitely want to dive into that. But first, we'd love to hear your origin story. So take us back in time. We want to be right there with you, smelling the cards. Tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
So I actually, I used to be a little bit of a jerk in high school, and I was in my robotics and engineering class. It was like for a dual enrollment still, like college prep in high school. And what we would do in our downtime is we would always play this poker game called Tunk. And it was really fun. We'd play spades, and there were a couple of people that were in band. I saw them playing Magic, you know,
nerds.
Like
nerds,
right? Nerds.
I'm just kidding. My wife is a band geek, so and I was a theater kid, so that's all right. But anyways, yeah. So
I've done theater, but yeah. Anyway, I used to always like try to pick up because I kind of knew the guys, and yeah. My way of being a friend is to kind of pick on my friends a little bit, you know. And I'd always tell them things like they'd rather tap cards than go out and tap girls, you know. Like I was mean, but anyway, one day they sat me down to play a game. I remember the first creature I ever cast was a greater basilisk from M11. And I had no clue what I was doing. And, I got smashed, but I'm very competitive in nature.
Mm.
And, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to beat you at your own game. I always had to borrow his deck, and it was just like a bunch of bolt commons from M12. And finally, I'd had about a belly full of it, right? So I found an old deck list for a Cold Author Red aggro deck. It had like the Goblin Bushwhacker with the Cold Author Rebirths and everything. And I still had no clue what I was doing, but I managed to beat him with it. And we had a video game teacher named Professor Walsh. He was actually regularly attending SCG Opens, and he was a little competitive. So I learned a little bit from him. But the guy that really pulled me into the game, he's a friend of mine that actually, he lives right down the road from me now, and I just visited him earlier today. His name's Dakota Taylor. He about only plays Commander, and that's all I used to play until I moved down to Jacksonville and got introduced to a competitive scene.
Cool. Man, that's cool. I love that story. It's so neat to hear how people get into Magic. Like you said, you're competitive by nature, and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to beat you at your own game. And so that's kind of what got you in. That's fun. And so would M11 be your first set?
Yeah, I guess you could say M11 was.
That's cool.
Like it was the first cards I actually interacted with.
Yeah, really cool. So since then, what's been your favorite set?
Man, that's going to be really hard to say. If I really had to choose my favorite set, I would definitely have to say it was Innistrad.
Ooh, very good, very good. And like,
you can't keep me away from Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah. So what's your favorite card?
Oh, my favorite card is Cabal Therapy, but my favorite creature is definitely Vendilion Click, like not close.
Okay. So for those of us who don't know, what is Cabal Therapy? What does it do? And then tell us why you like it.
So Cabal Therapy, it's a one black sorcery, and it's target player. You target a player, you name a non-land card. They then reveal their hand and discard all non-land cards with that name. Now, it also has flashback, and the flashback cost is a sacrifice of creature. So one of my favorite legacy decks is something called Nick Fit. So it has this really neat interaction to where you don't mind the blind fire on the Cabal Therapy, usually just named Brainstorm. And then you play a card called Veteran Explorer, which is one green for a 1/1. You sack it to the Cabal Therapy, and it has a triggered ability. When it dies, you get to search your library for two basic lands and put them into the battlefield untapped. And back whenever everybody was playing Delver, Nick Fit was actually pretty decent because it was not a symmetrical benefit to both players because they didn't play any basics. So it was pretty sweet.
Wow. Well, there you go. Good stuff, man. Cabal Therapy. Nice. Sweet. So that's fun to hear a little bit about where you came from, some of your favorites and why and all that good stuff. And you mentioned, you know, getting competitive when you were down in Florida. So take us to that era and tell us about when you started getting into Magic more seriously, when you started getting competitive, what was an early challenge that you faced then? And then how did you overcome it?
So honestly, the earliest challenge, I'll be the first one to tell anybody, I had to overcome my own arrogance, to be honest, because coming up from a small town, I guess you could say I was the biggest fish by the time I had moved out.
Yeah.
But I went from being a big fish in a small pond to being a small fish in an even bigger pond when I moved down to Jacksonville, because everybody there is competitive. And I was the only one that was kind of competitive where I lived. So I kind of had it in my mindset that I was the best. Nobody could tell me anything or any otherwise. And honestly, it kind of really affected my relations with the other players in the new area that I'd moved to. I kind of made it a little hard on myself to make friends when I didn't need to. And I was kind of full of myself. And it took a lot to get over that, to overcome tilt whenever I would lose to, because, you know, I had this mindset that I was always the superior player, when that's definitely not the case. Like, I'll be the first one to tell you nowadays, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm wearing clown shoes when I play sometimes because of the plays I'll make. But my greatest challenge was to get over myself and be willing to take input from others. Because the community itself, that's the greatest tool. If you're actually able to interact with people, if you're able to make friends and actually hear their input, you'll learn far more doing that than you will, like, through just straight playtesting.
So what was it that snapped you out of it or helped you see yourself differently? Because, I mean, that's hard. It's not easy to, you know, look at yourself retrospectively and make those changes. So what was it? Was there something that happened? Or tell us about that conversion that happened for you to make that realization.
So I ran into somebody that was exactly like me, you know, and they acted exactly the same as me in about every single manner. And we kind of clashed pretty hard. You know, I'm not going to name the person because I'm never going to speak ill of somebody else. That's something I've tried to set for myself.
Cool.
But they were just a really toxic, really rude person that would like tilt super hard when they lose. And I went to complain about them to a store employee at one point. I was like, yo, what's up with this guy? They were like, honestly, like, you and them are kind of one and the same. And, you know, that was like a kind of a real shocker to me because I hadn't realized how I'd been acting to the other players. But it kind of opened my eyes up a little bit. And I tried to start watching how I acted. I tried to kind of change pace. And the community started to be a little bit more accepting towards me.
Wow. That's powerful. And not everybody has, you know, that opportunity. But in your case, like, you basically had a mirror, you know, pulled up in front of you, and then somebody who thankfully, you know, had the courage to say, that's basically you, dude. But you, credit to you, you know, had the humility to go, and then start noticing what you were doing and changing that. So, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of factors in there, and that's really cool. So what can somebody do without having to meet somebody, you know, like that? Do you have any ideas or tips that maybe we can do to take a look at ourselves and realize if we are, you know, on that path or what we can do better, wherever we are, you know, we can do something better. Do you have any ideas on what we can do without having it, you know, shown in our face like that?
For me personally, like, it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah,
but
true.
Whenever I engage with another player now, I try to engage with them the way I would want to be engaged with. You know, kind of like the treat others how you want to be treated sort of mindset.
Yeah.
It's like now whenever I lose, like, it's and I'm definitely still a work in progress, I try to handle it with grace. I try to look back on the loss. Try to think, okay, is there anywhere I messed up? Is there anything that I can find out about this match? Because, you know, each match, whether I win or lose, I try to make sure I at least learn something. So if I'm focusing on that, I found it a lot harder for me to really tilt, you know, like, and complain about luck or variance or getting land flooded, because there are things that you can do to kind of undermine variance a little bit, you know, like, yeah, I probably should have mulliganed that hand. I play this card game. I understand that variance is a thing, you know?
Yeah. So true. Reminds me of the three qualities that MTG Pro Tutor like really, you know, stands on are sportsmanship, dedication, and respect. And sportsmanship, like when you dive into that word, there's a lot to it. But one of the things that makes a good sportsman, for example, is winning with grace and losing with dignity. Or it's winning with dignity and losing with grace. I always forget which one it is, but flip-flopping doesn't really matter. But the point is, like you said, like being a better loser, right? So how you take the losses. And in our case, in this particular game, understanding that variance comes with the territory, understanding that there are some things that you can do about it, like mulliganing and how you build your deck and stuff like that. And then when you win, you know, being a good winner, like, you know, obviously not rubbing in people's faces and all that stuff, but you can still enjoy your win. But just being mindful of others, stuff like that. So, when you mentioned that, then that's kind of the lens that I like to look at it and trying real hard to remember, hey, like, you know, they just played a Magic game too, and they feel just like me and stuff like that. So that's, I mean, that's cool that you had your eyes open and that you went through that experience to make you a stronger person, you know? I think that's pretty neat.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, once again, I'm still definitely a work in progress.
Right.
But,
we all are.
Like, I'll be the first to say, I'm very quick to tilt, like, not only whenever it comes to Magic. I also play a competitive Overwatch and a few other video games. But as long as I try to look back on the match and focus on that rather than the fact that I lost, because the more that I think about this as just a loss, the quicker I am to tilt. But I kind of try to distract myself thinking about the earlier terms of the game, you know. And if I ever win, you know, like, I try not to act too excited, you know, I'll let them see that I'm happy, but I usually don't offer the handshake. If I win, I let my opponent offer the handshake, you know?
Oh, the infamous handshake politics that Magic the Gathering players love to make such a big deal about. Like, we make the biggest deals out of the smallest things. It's so ridiculous.
My thing is now I've become the kind of person to where the last thing I want to ever do is make somebody uncomfortable or to upset somebody. Yeah. And I've actually had people get upset at me for offering a handshake, say if like they got land screwed or whatever, you know, then they're like, that wasn't a good game. We didn't play it, you know, like,
That's on them, bro. Yeah. I mean, that's on them, right? Like that's a reflection of their, you know, attitude towards themselves than it is anything else. They're just taking it out in the world. But yeah, it's crazy. Cause then somebody else will get mad at you for not doing it. It's just like, oh, you know, you can't please everybody. It's crazy. Maybe sit down in the pregame chit chat, be like, okay, so after this game, win or lose, do you want to shake or no? And I don't know. Just kidding.
Yeah, like go ahead and sign a waiver.
Yeah, exactly. Sign a waiver. Yeah, just wear a shirt that says "I don't handshake." Period, or whatever. Anyways, I'm going to bore people real quick with a quick tangent. Who's your Overwatch main?
My Overwatch main is Brigitte. Easy. Like, okay. I used to be a Reinhardt main, but now I main Brigitte, and I actually have a 69% win percentage with her.
Love it, man. That's awesome. I just played a competitive match earlier tonight before we hopped on the call, so good stuff, man.
Oh, who's your main?
Pharah and Junkrat. That's who I play.
Oh, wow. You're like my worst enemy.
Yeah. So love those. And then I'll pull a Winston when the team needs one every now and again. So.
Oh yeah. I can easily swap Winston. Yeah. Like if I'm playing Ryan and I see like a Tracer or a Zenyatta's just really messing us up.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Back to Magic. All right. So thank you for opening up and sharing that with us and sharing some tips and tricks and some ideas, insights that we can do, you know, to get better at that. So we're back in your early days, getting competitive. You're growing as a person. And that's another really cool thing about Magic. It's how it helps us through a game. It helps us be a better person, right? As we improve as players, we become better people, you know, because those skills, that self-reflection that you went through to make you a better Magic player, I'm sure also spilled over to other areas of your life as well. So I think that's really cool about Magic. So we're in this early phase. You're getting competitive. You're getting into stuff. We mentioned Star City Games, how you kind of started hitting up that circuit. Tell us about when you started going to Grand Prix. When was your first one and how did you get tuned into that whole business?
So my best friend, one of my best friends, I have a couple actually, his name is Coco Lopez, and he's from New Jersey. Anyway, we were like, man, I really want to go to a GP because, you know, like we'd been going to Opens and I'd kind of started to pop up a little bit here and there. I was mentioned in a Patrick Chapin article and honestly, that got in my head a little bit. But he's from New Jersey originally. And both of us were really wanting to go. I have another friend named Joey Sprouse who also runs a podcast. He was wanting to go to New Jersey. He kind of talked us into it. And this was during the copycat era of Standard. I had got in probably about 200 matches with Teemer Tower on Moto. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I love my copycat matchup, but I really hate my Mardu vehicles matchup and Green Black feels really bad as well. So we go to the GP. I come off my two buys. At the end of the day, I lose my last round to not make day two. Every single copycat deck I played against, I beat. And I lost to. And every Mardu vehicles and green black opponent, I beat. So it was like,
oh man,
I flipped the result. Yeah,
it's opposite like, day.
I was just like, what is this? You know, like, is this loss? Yeah. But it was still a pretty sweet trip because one of my favorite things about Magic is the traveling. So we were in Secaucus, New Jersey, which is 30 minutes away from New York City. And, you know, that's always been like a goal of mine. I really want to visit New York City. So while I was there, you know, like that's what I spent the next day doing. I just toured the city.
Love it, man. That's so cool. And New York is a really cool place to go around and just check out. So, okay, that's really cool. So you went off and did that, and that you got your first taste of a Grand Prix, and didn't make day two, but as we mentioned, you kind of made up for that pretty soon after. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
that's pretty neat. So on your journey, as we, you know, kind of weave our way into you know, your big highlights and touch on those, you've had ups and downs, of course. Every Magic player does. What would you say has been your worst Magic moment?
My worst Magic moment. I'd have to think about that. Probably my worst Magic moment. Like, I'm not sure if it's like a bad beat story or if it's like a level of self-realization we're looking for, but.
Whatever comes to mind.
I guess I'll go with a bad beat story. How about that? You down for a bad beat?
Tell us.
Okay. So I'm playing for, I'm playing this sweet Solta Seasons Past control deck in a Star City Open in Atlanta, right? And to this day, I still haven't top eight of the Star City Open. Like I don't think I ever will. It's about like a PPTQ. I've never won one, but I hit second place at 15 of them within 4 months.
Yeah.
And, it's like awful, but at the Star City Open, I'm playing for my winning in to top eight. I am against a red green ramp opponent, which is an abysmal matchup. Going into game three, I am on the play. My opponent mulligans to four. I keep a two-lander with like a Sylvan Advocate, a Transgress the Mind. I have an ultimate price because, you know, he has Tireless Trackers. And I just have like the stacked hand of twos.
Yeah.
Anyway, I go to Transgress the Mind him. I take his only spell. It was a Explosive Vegetation. He draws. He ripped Tireless Tracker up the top. So he plays it, passes the turn back to me. I go ahead and ultimate price it. He draws another Tireless Tracker off the top. And this time I don't have an ultimate price. He's able to play that, rattle a land off into an Explosive Vegetation while I'm still stuck on two lands.
Oh, I haven't drawn my second land.
Yeah. He goes Explosive Vegetation into, it was a Dragon Lord Atarka the next turn and the following turn. Like he just drew a billion cards off the Tireless Tracker and it was over. Like it was real embarrassing too, because you know, once you get at the higher tables, you start to get crowds around watching you, and yeah. It wasn't on feature. So we were one of the only ones that didn't call for a feature match where we were sitting. And I just had this like crowd of 20 people watch me essentially get the clown shoes put on.
Oh man. Well, I mean, what could you have done?
Now that hand, I'm on the play. I'm playing a three color control deck and I kept a two lander.
Okay.
So like I had spells, I had things to do. Like, statistically it looks like I should have drawn out of it, but that's, I've gotten to the point nowadays where I generally don't keep a two lander in a control deck unless I have like a Search for Iskanta or some way to churn through cards. Yeah. And I didn't have any of that. So honestly, it kind of feels like I got what I was asking for, but I can't hate myself for keeping it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So obviously, so talking about worst moments is not just to, you know, wallow in our self pity. what did you learn from that experience that you can share with us so that we might be, you know, on the lookout in similar situations in the future?
So mulliganing, like I kept a straight seven. I should preface with that.
Okay.
Mulliganing is your friend. I used to hate mulliganing. Like I always used to think like, oh, if I'm mulliganing, I'm just going to lose. Like I'm just going to, my next hand's going to be even worse. But if it's a mediocre seven, the mulligan is basically free. You know, like if you have one spell that you're not going to be able to cast until like turn five or six, and the rest of the hand's just really mediocre, I just snap ship it for a six. Like I've just kind of become more aggressive with my mulligans, and I feel like it's kind of helped me out a lot more. Like if I don't have a pathway to victory, if it's just like a couple of cards that'll let me dawdle around, I'm shipping it.
That is a very clear cut and good lesson. And obviously, you know, what's mulliganable? Wow. I just made that one up. Is obviously a discussion that you can get lost in forever because it totally depends on the deck and the matchup and all this stuff. But generally speaking, that is great advice to just be more liberal with your mulligans, because I don't think people mulligan enough. So
no, not nearly.
Good stuff. So obviously on the flip side of our highs, on the flip side of our lows are our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Honestly, that would be GP Detroit. Yeah. A little backstory on the GP. So it was a team GP, and my teammates that I won with were Antonio Perez and my best friend Drew Lopez. what happened was in Orlando at a GP a month before that, I'd kind of been on the fence of quitting because moving back, you know, there's no competitive scene or anything where I'm living. And they talked me into going down to GP Orlando because all the boys were going to be there. I played Bant Nexus and I got a top 64, and they got me up to 4 pro points because I had a top 64 the last GP I played in as well. And I was like, hey, I have 4 pro points. I was like, there's like 3 more GPs I maybe can go to. Maybe I'll try to hit bronze. Anyway, I run into my friend Antonio Perez there. He says, hey, do you want to go to GP Detroit? I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm thinking about it, but plane tickets are really expensive, and I just got done moving. And he said, well, you and Lopez, I think y'all are two of like the better players out of Jacksonville. I would be willing to pay for y'all's plane tickets if y'all would team with me.
Oh, yeah. Nice, dude.
Yeah, so he paid for our plane tickets and our hotel. And Antonio was like the GOAT. And anyway,
In return, you got him a GP win. So I'm sure he was pretty happy.
Yeah, he said, hey, if I have to ride in y'all's coattails to the Pro Tour, I'm happy.
And he did.
now that put a lot of pressure on us. All right. Because like when we get there, like Drew and I thought about it. We told him while he was in the bathroom, we talked to each other. I was like, Drew, what if Tony Dunn like dropped like this $1,500 or however many dollars in, and we just go 0-2. Like, and for a second, it looked like that because we started out 3-2 in the tournament. And I actually have a pretty feel good story. Tony said, all right, boys, I'm like Rocky Balboa in Rocky IV. I ain't going down no more, is what he kept saying. He's like, we're not going down no more. And we won every single round after that. And,
wow.
And since I won, I got 6 pro points. I hit the bronze, you know, like which bronze really doesn't do anything right now, but I just had a sheer hatred of PPTQs, so it was a pretty big deal for me.
It's a big deal for you. That's cool.
Yeah, it was a huge deal for me. Like, but Drew and I, when we won, like both of us were just kind of holding back tears because we're really the ones that have seen each other grow. You know, his input whenever it comes to Magic is the input that I always value more than just about anybody else, to be honest.
Cool.
We've just kind of seen each other grow from like trying to be the FNM hero, eventually the GP champs, and just being able to say that I won a GP with my best friend is honestly like one of the biggest highs I could ever have.
Oh man, that's so cool. I love stories like that. That's so cool. Thanks for sharing, for sure. That's awesome. And then that queued you guys up for which Pro Tour?
Pro Tour Cleveland.
Nice. Very nice. When's that? That's
February.
Cool. Very. And is that the team one as well? Is that a team one?
I don't believe it's
okay,
the team,
okay.
Team Pro Tour.
I lost track. Like there was a team event that queued you up for another team thing, and anyway, but this one's not. So okay, cool. So it's going to be in Cleveland. All three of you are going to be going off there. That's going to be great. Is it all of your first Pro Tours?
It is. Cool. Like a couple of my friends have actually been to the Pro Tour before. One of them, Max Segraves, he's been to the Pro Tour, and another. He's a pretty good friend. His name is Min Nguyen. He went to the Pro Tour and he X'd one day one. He didn't have too good of a day two, but you know, that's kind of been like the crown achievement of our group of friends until the GP wins.
Cool.
So it's kind of my goal to outdo man. You know, I kind of have this little rivalry with him.
Of course. Awesome. That's super cool. So now leading up to Grand Prix Detroit, let's talk about that. What format was it? And since it was a team event, how did you guys come up with your decks and walk us through that process?
So it was Team Unified Modern. Tony, he was going to be in a middle seat. That way Drew and I could both turn to him to help him.
Nice. And super smart.
And we were like, Tony, just play Tron. Like, you know, cause Tron, it has enough free wins all by itself. I actually hate the deck. I hate the card Ancient Stirring, but that's another story. We were like, you play the middle seat. We want an Ancient Stirrings deck on our team. And we think that's the best Ancient Stirrings deck. Now, Drew is honestly, I would say the king of Snapcaster Bolt. And he plays Jeskai Control. That's all he's ever really played in Modern outside of Tron a couple of times. And it's his favorite deck. Like he has the thing completely foiled out. And at heart, I'm a blue-white control. I'm a blue-white control guy, but I also played Hollow One. So if I let Drew play Jeskai, that means I'm not going to have Celestial Colonnades and I can't have Lightning Bolts for Hollow One either. But you know, like whenever it came to Drew, I just trusted him on his deck. I was like, whatever, I'll just play humans because humans is supposed to be one of the best decks. I didn't get a chance to play test it at all because, you know, like moving and starting a new job, life gets really busy.
Wow.
So we sit down for round one. You know, like I read a few articles on the way. I tried to read up on I read Andrea Mengucci's sideboard guide and tried to get a general understanding of the deck. And the lines were pretty straightforward. Like with Meddling Mage, you know, I always knew what card to name and given the matchup since I've played Modern almost since Modern was created, to be honest. So I had this really neat game where I was up against Goryeo's Vengeance. And what do you think would be the card to name against the Boborygmos Goryeo's Vengeance deck would be?
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't even know the first thing. So
I snap named Nourishing Shoal.
Okay.
Because with Nourish, that doesn't allow him to draw his entire deck with the Grizzlebrands. He can't go into Nourishing Shoal.
Oh man, good for you.
Right, just shut him out. And he was just like, wow, he actually said, I haven't had somebody named Nourishing Shoal against me. They usually name Through the Breach or Vengeance, and I kill them with the other. And I was just like, hit, you know, like.
Good for you. Yeah, I'm the one that would make that kind of mistake for sure. Oof, good for you. Good call. Well done. That's cool. Man, that's so crazy. You just picked up a humans deck without playtesting it and then just did so well with it. Good for you. So Modern's your thing.
Yeah, Modern's my thing. And I've played with all the cards before, like Champion of the Parish and everything. You know, like I've played them while they were in Standard. So yeah. I was familiar with how they worked, except for Meddling Mage. But, you know, I've played that in Blue-White Control before. But the only card I hadn't played before that was, honestly, Mantis Rider.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That card's pretty easy, you know.
It's yeah, like, it is.
It's like you put it on the stack and you go ahead and write down that they took three.
I like it. That's cool. Man, that is so fun. So going to that event with your teammates and just doing so well. And you illustrated what that meant for you, the bronze and pro tour and winning with your best friend. Like, that's so cool. And I just love how, you know, it got was it Tony was the one that took you guys there?
Yeah, it was
yeah.
Tony.
And so he got Tony, made his dreams come true. Like, that is so cool. Yeah, what a good story.
Tony's the GOAT. But, man, he embarrassed us so hard at the end of day one. Because, you know, like, we made day two at X and 2. And Drew and I were like, we did it. And, like, and Tony was like, yeah, we got it, boys. Anyway, we're walking to try to find food because we hadn't ate all day.
Of course, yeah.
And we walked by the Channel Fireball team, right? You know? And, you know, like, I just, like, nod my head and I'm cordial to him because we played against one of their teams. It was Siggy, Ifro, and Ben Stark that day.
Yeah.
And Tony turned to, like, Paolo and Matt Nass and Sam Pardee, and he told him, he was like, well, boys, I'll see y'all tomorrow. Because he's kind of, you know, because Tony's a character and a half. But that was, like, the greatest call out I've ever seen in my life, because the next day at the same time, we were sitting down in the finals to play against, like, Sam Pardee, Matt Nass, and
nice.
it was like when Drew thought about it, we were like, what in the world Tony got going on? You know, like, the anime called him out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, man, that's so fun. That is so fun. Cool, man. So what do you think of Modern right now? Just this episode is going to come out, obviously, a couple weeks after we record it, but what's going on in Modern? What's good? What's hot? Like, just give us a quick snapshot of what's going on.
So in Modern right now, it's constantly in a weird place. Like, I think it's insanely fast. I wouldn't really feel comfortable playing Blue-White Control in Modern right now as it is, because you have Banned Spirits, you have Humans, which I don't think Humans is a good matchup for Blue-White. Everybody tries to say it is, but every time I played against it at the GP, I literally, in my top four match, I 2-0'd him. My Blue-White Control opponent in game two had six spells in his hand that he just couldn't cast due to Meddling Mages and Gaddock Teague. And the deck's nutty. You also have Kark Clan Ironworks. The speed of the format's just a little unreal right now. And I think a lot of it could honestly be balanced out if it weren't for the card Ancient Stirrings.
Hmm.
I think Ancient Stirrings actually gives, decks like KCI, Lantern, Tron, like too much resiliency, I guess is the word, or I can't even think of the word right now, but it makes the strategies too good, because without it, the decks, they're still viable, but they're not going to be like, you know, like meta breaking tier one like they are. Like how many cards do we have to see get printed before Tron's not playable anymore? You know,
yeah.
Like, We just had Assassin's Trophy. We've had Dampening Sphere. We now have Unmoored Ego. I don't think anybody's playing it. And we've always had sort of like Field of Ruin and Surgical Extractions. yet Tron is still top eighting. It just can't be stopped. You know, like it's a monster.
Yeah, good point.
But as far as Martin goes right now, I think I'm actually going to be playing in regionals this weekend up in Atlanta, and I'll probably stop by to visit the Pro Tour scene.
Cool. Good for you.
I'm going to be playing Hollowed One. It doesn't have a great matchup to humans or Vant Spirits, which are really popular right now, but I'm a little unfamiliar with the meta, and Hollowed One's the deck I know. And I do actually value playing the deck you know the best in Modern because you know the matchups in and out. I honestly got really, really, really stupid lucky in Detroit, just to be completely honest. You know, like I wasn't really cemented in sideboarding. I wasn't really very knowledgeable in how the matchups usually turn out, but I was playing to the best of my capability. But I'm going to be playing Hollowed One because I actually do enjoy the Dredge matchup a lot. And Atlanta is also the home of Saul Malka. And I'm kind of leaning on a lot of people trying to play like rock strategies and Jund decks, you know, like, cause like that's the home of the rock. And, Hollowed One kind of beats up on it a little bit. And, I'm just going to try to hope I get paired against Dredge every round, I guess.
Cool. Well, good luck at that event for sure. That'll be a lot of fun to go up there and, kick it around a bit. That'd be pretty cool. So, I mean, you've obviously played tons of Magic all over the place against lots of different people. What would you say is the biggest mistake that you've seen players make?
The biggest mistake that I've seen players make. I see, and I'm guilty of it myself. I see people all the time just commit to lines that's going to play them into a hole. It's the moment where you know you're going to lose the game. You're thinking, oh, I have to cast this into this, but then they're going to have this. And then they commit to it saying, oh, I know he has this, but I have to do this. You don't have to, you know, like, if you're not dead the next turn, give yourself another draw step. Say, if it's, I'm trying to think of a good scenario. It's like if I'm playing humans and my burn opponent has an active Grim Lavamancer, I'm not going to keep jamming threats out, hoping that they run out of cards in their graveyard. And I've seen people do this, you know. It's like, well, maybe they'll run out of cards eventually, and I'll just keep playing out all my threats. That never works. You're going to lose that game 100% of the time. It's instead better to sandbag your threats or just sit and chill until you like draw a Reflector Mage. I'm not wording this right. I'm sorry about this, man. But just seeing people play themselves into a hole is honestly like they get tunnel vision. They don't try to look at the they don't try to think about what they have an opportunity to draw next turn. How the situation might change.
Yeah. That's awesome. So give yourself another draw step whenever your back's against the wall, and don't commit to lines that play yourself into a hole.
Right. Yeah. And there's also like hiding information. You know, if you have this real sweet, you know, like sideboard card, like say if you're playing Jund and you board in the Damnation against humans, you know that they have something like a Mantis Rider in hand because you saw it from an Inquisition earlier in the game. You have a Damnation, but you it'll drop you down to like two. Just hold the Damnation. You know, like don't let them see the Damnation. Because if you know you're just dead to the Mantis Rider anyway, just try to conceal the information because that sometimes they play like Selfless Spirit or they'll know not to overextend their threats into it. So like that in and of itself, if you play the Damnation, you're playing the match itself into a hole because it's better than not knowing about it.
Good point. So through your Magic experience, what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
I actually kind of apply it to sales, I guess, in a sense. Try to conceal all the information that I have. You know, like in sales, you never want to lead with the lowest price that you have first. Earlier tonight, I was playing against my friend Dakota, and once again, you know, he's not insanely competitive, but he had a Sheena Ghost the Reveler on the table. It was just a casual game of Commander, and he had a Satyr token. Well, I have a Woodfall Promise in my hand that I can cast to just go ahead and kill the Sheena Ghost, but he doesn't know that. So I'm like, okay, I'll attack it with a Worldbreaker. He blocks with his Satyr, and following up, I just play a Woodfall Promise and kill the Sheena Ghost. So that way, I'm going to play the Woodfall Promise regardless that turn, you know, because I want to kill the Xenoghost. If I play it preemptively, I'd rather have the creature off the board than just attack him for five. which I don't know, 5's a lot, but it's commander.
Right.
But I don't show them everything I have up front. I kind of sandbag it. So in sales, you know, I don't let them know the lowest price I can give it to them for. I try to understand what they have or what they're trying to do first.
Right. That's cool. That's really cool. Again, I love learning things from Magic and applying it to, you know, all areas of life. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty sweet. Awesome. So we got to learn a little bit about, you know, biggest mistakes that you observe, what you've learned. As a Magic player, what are some of your shortcomings that you have recognized and that you are currently, you know, working on?
My shortcomings? I'm one to get very, very bad tunnel vision. I can miss some pretty obvious lines. Like, I'm streaming. Streaming's a little hard because I'm also focusing on chat. But not too long ago, Tony was actually watching me play. I was playing Hollowed One. I had cycled a Street Wraith and cast a Faithless Looting. And it was like my turn two. And I drew a Hollowed One. And rather than cast the second... So I didn't cycle a Street Wraith. I just cast a Faithless Looting. I drawn a Hollowed One, and I discarded like a Burning Inquiry and the other Faithless Looting, when instead I could have cast the second Faithless Looting, hoping to draw another Hollowed One, because then they would actually be free. I get really bad tunnel vision. I get really excited whenever I draw a card, and I kind of slam it, you know? There is one thing I got a lot better at. Playing Control, whenever I first started, I would kind of just fire off counters willy-nilly. I'd counter honestly the first thing I see, but as I've started to progressively play a little bit more, you know, like I've just kind of learned to sandbag on them and what the cards are that are actually must counters. You know, like I don't snap fire off a counter on every spell now. I guess I've kind of grown in that aspect.
Yeah,
it's like I had one guy one time. This is actually a pretty funny story. He has a Lumbering Falls out. Right. And he's got buku mana. He's got like 8 other lands. He goes, I'll animate Lumbering Falls. And I was like, I'll disallow it. He goes, I'll disallow your disallow. And I was just like, okay, that's fine. But he had the mana to activate again. People get in that mindset of like, okay, I have a counter spell for whatever he tries to do, rather than just, take a step back once anything enters the stack or you move to a phase, you know, just sort of take a breath and analyze the situation from there with the information that you have.
Yeah.
You know, just because your opponent snap fires off a response, don't think that you have to play insanely quickly at the same pace that your opponent's playing. Just take a breath, you know, just make sure that you're playing at a pace where you won't miss anything.
I love it. Oh, that's good stuff. And when you are keeping your fingers on the pulse of Magic and trying to keep up with stuff, where do you turn? What are resources that you go to that you can suggest to us?
Honestly, the resources that I use, they're my friends. They're other players in the Magic the Gathering community. Like right now, I understand that the podcast has a following. If you guys just converse with each other, you know, just be constructive. Just you guys are your own tool. You are your best tools. You have each other. You're never going to be able to find any other sort of resource that's better than that. You know, like reading articles, there's only so much you can gain. It takes a friendly, positive environment that you can turn to for constructive criticism, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You need to be able to turn to your friend and just kind of ask like, hey, I really like this card, but do you think it's too cute? And them to be able to turn to you, knowing that your feelings won't be hurt, and say, yeah, bro, I absolutely think it's too cute. But if you think it's great, go ahead and try it out. You know, like just kind of like, I read articles every now and then. Like, you know, I read Channel Fireball every once in a blue moon, Star City Games sometimes, whenever like Adrian Sullivan or Sam Black has something in Selective. But outside of that, I just kind of talk to my friends.
Cool. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Just turning to your friends and building and using your community for sure. And is there a book that you read and it doesn't do Magic related? In fact, it probably isn't because there's like 3 Magic books written in history. But is there a book that you've read that has impacted how you view and play the game?
Is there a book that I've read too? I wish I could say that there was. I used to be a huge reader growing up, yeah. But as I've gotten older, you know, like work in my brain's kind of come from Magic, you know, like reading Magic cards. But
yeah.
I haven't really read a book in a hot minute now. It's probably been too long, to be honest.
Well, then my recommendation, man, is audiobooks. Pick that up.
Audiobooks?
Dude, yeah. I have Audible all the time, or I have Audible and listen to books all the time. Like, I used to read a lot, and now I just listen a lot. So I would do that. So
yeah,
that was free, man. That's from me to you.
Thanks, man. Thanks,
cool. So resources, turn to your friends. Books recommendation is read one. and it's been fun. I love this. I love hearing, you know, where you're coming from. Oh yeah. So where are you going? So what are some upcoming events that we can see you at? We love cheering on past guests. What are your plans in the near future of Magic?
So I will be at regionals in Atlanta. Outside of that, I'm not really sure what the future holds for me next year because it's income tax season and I'm in sales, you know, so I might have to get my invite to Cleveland deferred to London, which I kind of don't mind. London would be in April, you know, like I love to travel overseas. That's part of the reason why I play Magic is to travel, but it's either going to be Cleveland or London, the next large event that I go to. I might sneak in a GP before then, but outside of that, I'm not certain.
And before we wrap up, I do want to ask, are you doing much Magic online? Because you mentioned there's not a huge competitive scene where you're at right now, where you just relocated. So just to keep your edge, are you playing a lot of online?
Oh, a lot. Like okay, I'm streaming a little bit right now, and I play a lot of Magic online. I used to, back whenever I would only focus on playing and not really streaming, I actually did pretty good. I kind of hit trophy leader in Modern a couple months back. Wow. With Hollywood one.
That's cool.
It wasn't the trophy leader, but I was like in the top 15.
Cool.
I play a lot of Modo. That's something else that I strongly attribute to me being able to play a little bit better. It's definitely kind of helped improve my speed. And I have severe ADHD, so it kind of helps me that I don't have a lot of things distracting me while I'm playing Moto, you know?
Cool. Very cool. Sweet. Well, quick reminder again to you prodigies, if you want to connect with Will, you can do so on Twitter is the best place to do that. He's at WillCorson94. So look him up there, follow him, and say thanks for being on the show or reach out, ask a question. That's where you can get contact with Will. So Will, as we close things up here, we would love one parting piece of guidance from you, either something that you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
All right. Now, this is something I was actually meaning to say earlier. Guys, I can't express this enough. Get sleep before any event. I don't care if you have to leave early. Don't get to the hotel at like 2 a.m. and then wake up to play at 7. You're going to hate yourself. It's going to impair you a lot more than you would like to admit. Get sleep, get a good breakfast. That in and of itself, I can't even explain how important that is.
Love it. And Will, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your experiences with us, to share those fun stories. It's really fun to hear where you come from and look into your world and learn from, you know, your past experiences. So thank you. You're a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be a mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Sean, and I hope you take care.
Thank you, William, again for being a guest here on the show. Episode 313 is all wrapped up. Prodigies, the show notes are at mtgpro2.com/WilliamCorson. Before we close out, I want to say thank you again to Paragon City Games. You can find them at ParagonCityGames.com for their support of the show, and a huge thank you to the patrons who make this all possible. Thank you so much. Prodigies, as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. I love connecting with you. I love hearing what you're up to. So make sure you pop into the Facebook group and make a post of what decks you're playing, what events you're going to, ask questions. But it's a really active community, a great place to learn and grow. And there's even several past guests of the show who are on there. So if you want to pick their brains, then go ahead and join us at mtgpro2.com/Facebook group, where you'll be redirected to the Facebook group and join us there. So thanks again for tuning in. Loved having you. Can't wait till we do it again. And until then, I am Sean of the Gathering. We will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.